Java voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raised on shotguns, we say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Raymond's Squeaky Chair on Mad Science. Man.
But he's on the other side of the office now.
Yeah. Alright, I got my little mini submachine gun slash, I don't know, whatever it is. All right, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you'd like to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, and the left side of my brain is rattling because every time I try to talk, somebody squeaks their chair. Man, it's on like Donkey Kong is what it is.
I'm going to hang up.
No, don't hang up. man. Alright, so anyway, let's see here. Water for fuel and engine designs and mad science. What do they all have in common? Well, I guess it's because when you're mad because of science not doing what science could be doing, it's frustrating. So if you go back and look through history and you look at all the different engine designs throughout history, it's amazing how many different engines that you never even heard of that are actually out there. You know, like the flame licker. Whoever thought that they'd have an engine called a flame licker? Well, essentially what the flame licker does is it uses vaporized fuel, which is the gas off the burning of like butane or propane or whatever right beside it. And then the intake sucks in the gas and burns the gas off of it. So they call that a flame licker. Of course, now I wouldn't want a flame licker in my car because I think that flame would lick my car right to the dirt, man. It'd probably set it on fire and I'd be running around screaming, stop, drop, and roll. You know, roll Charlie around. Charlie be okay. You know, put some band-aids on. some burn gel or something like that. So flame lickers wouldn't be a good engine design because that probably hazardous to whoever's nearby or whatever. Imagine rolling up into the gas station to get some new propane and your flame licker's running. Hits a little bit of fumes and stuff. That's how the dinosaurs died. Did you guys know that? Hey, you guys didn't know that, did you? Caveman killed a dinosaur. Go watch the video. It explains it all in graphic detail how the dinosaurs died.
I didn't know that. Sorry, we had the mic muted so you wouldn't hear my screen on the chair.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, Caveman killed the dinosaur. That's how it happened, man. You know, you just have to go watch the video to get the whole skinny on what occurred and why all the dinosaurs disappeared off the planet. But, you know, either way, you don't want the flame licker engine. That's not safe. Don't play with fire, boys and girls. Alright, so I posted a few links over there in the chat room in the superchat.html so that you can get a general idea what it is that I'm babbling on about like some sort of buffoon. But nonetheless, the first video that I posted over there was, I believe it's Japanese. It's the writing that kind of confused me. Japanese and Chinese writing are kind of close, but not exactly. So if you don't know what you're looking at, you won't know whether it's Japanese or Chinese. Nonetheless, it was over in Asia. Let's just say Asia. It was in Asia. Anyway, they got a nifty little van over there that they drive around using water for fuel. All right, well, apparently, the inventor of that met an untimely demise. Not sure exactly what occurred there, but I can understand because Stan Myers didn't fare so well either when he was driving around a dune buggy in 1979 using water for fuel. But this particular engine that I'm talking about using water for fuel uses a slightly different method than the one I'm proposing to build an engine doing. This particular engine has two injector sites. One of them injects hydrogen into the chamber, into the cylinder, and ignites the hydrogen. The heat temperature created by the hydrogen burning inside the chamber literally heats up the cylinder, and then the second injector injects in a fine mist of water, which then expands, pushing down the piston. So basically is running as a steam engine. Huh, that sounds kind of familiar there, Raymond. What do you think? Man, you still got your mic muted so that chair don't squeak? Oh, man, we're going to have to grease that chair.
Oh.
Huh? What did I miss?
I don't know, man. What did you miss?
Raymond stepped out. Running the internal combustion engine like a steam engine, does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Well, see, now, if they can do it,
what's not going on about it?
Huh?
Go ahead. We're listening.
All right. Well, see, my brain is like shifting to the left and shifting to the right. It's dodging squeaky chairs and wisecrack comments and such.
I try very hard not to squeak this chair.
Oh. Well, remain calm. We can do this thing, man.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, So you taking a look at all these different engine designs out there. So we already know Stanmeyer's ran a car back in 1979 using water technology. Of course, he used a slightly different method as well. Now, either the Chinese or Japanese, somebody over in Asia, I'll have to find out whether that's Chinese or Japanese. It really does look like Japanese writing on there. So if anybody in the chat room happens to get over there and look at that video and you recognize the difference between Chinese and Japanese writing, please tell me so I can get it right. Could be Korean or Vietnamese or something other than that. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, nonetheless, the engine design is using hydrogen to heat up the cylinder and then injecting water in and running it like a steam engine, which is part of the process of what I've been talking about building an engine. So, with that said, if you go on down to the next video in line that was posted over there, there is Paul Pantone who did the Geet design, the Geet engine. Either one of you guys familiar with the Geet engine?
Yeah.
All right, well, essentially what he's got going on is a reactor system that essentially breaks down everything before it ever even goes into the intake, and he's recirculating the exhaust to use it to pressurize a bubbler, which is actually causing it to stir everything up, so to speak, so that it can be basically vaporized to send back through the system. So he's burning pretty much garbage fuels in this reactor that he's designed to run the engine. So that's the simple of it, which is another part of what I was talking about the perfect engine design. Now the next video in line down there is an actual engine that they say you can buy for $1,000 on their website, which is the Geet approved design that will run off of basically water. And these folks use like a 50-50 mix. They use a little bit of water and a little bit of gas with it. But nonetheless, it's still using vaporization technology. Using the Geet design, but they have a bubbler which has got 50% water and 50% gas, and the exhaust goes down into the bubbler and basically vaporizes it, gives it gas, and that goes up to feed the engine. So once again, not new technology, but is readily available. They say you can buy that engine for $1,000 on their website. The next one down there I kind of thought was a cool video because it was like a documentary on old-style marine diesel engines and the pistons about the big as my kitchen table, which is pretty cool. Because you can actually, like, for those of you that don't understand mechanics, you can see a cutaway view of how these things work, and they're so big that, I mean, it's like right there in your face in 3D, you know? It's cool. And you can see the piston coming up, you can see the exhaust stroke, you can see how everything's working mechanically inside of an engine. So if you never knew about internal combustion engines and watched that video, you get a really good understanding because of the simplicity of what they're saying on how this thing actually functions. So, the next one down, I threw a link in there to eBay, which is a doggone... I also threw a picture link in there, so if you click on that picture link there in the chat room, you'll see what is a 20-amp, 1,000-watt induction heating circuit. And if you look in the picture down at the bottom, they're using these heating circuits to literally melt metal into molten metal. That's it. It uses induction heating technology to heat something up where you can literally heat it to the point where it melts. And so, with that said, the engine design that I'm speaking of, since you already know that if you can get the cylinder up to operating temperature and begin to inject water in there, at the very least, when that water hits inside that cylinder, it's going to create a flash steam effect with expansion that will push that piston down and run the engine like a steam engine. Good thing about this particular design here using this induction coil is two things. One thing is you get to circulate water through there, which you could actually use the induction coil itself because it's a tube. You can use the induction coil as the fuel line, which is also a preheater of your fuel before you ever even send it into the chamber. And so, with that said, the other good part of it is that using the induction heating, you wouldn't have to run this circuit continuously, just have a thermostat that would only kick this thing on when the operating temperature fell down below, you know, let's say 200 or 300 degrees, whatever you find that the best results you get somewhere in that range. I'm thinking 200 to 300 degrees would be sufficient, but this has actual capabilities of going up yet even higher, up into the thousands of degrees. So with that said, you'd have that particular style circuitry, that coil that would be able to heat the cylinder up inside that heat that piston in that cylinder up to operating temperature at a rapid rate, then inject your finely vaporized and then or atomized and then vaporized water into the cylinder in small quantities. Now see, this is where the frustration part comes in. I've seen so many mechanics out there that I've spoke to about this particular engine design, and they just don't get it, man. It's like they're stuck inside the school book so deep that you can't... It's like a brick wall. You've got a school book between me and this mechanic. Now I'll have them up to the very middle of the conversation because what I'm talking about, it all makes sense to them. But then something happens. I watch their eyes go back into their head and they're like, hold on a second. But don't that defy the second law of thermodynamics? And I'm about to fall up out my chair or off the porch or wherever it is I'm standing. I'm about to ready to jump off the cliff at this point in the game because there went another one. It's like I should be playing that song, Another One Bites the Dust.
Another One Rides a Bus?
Yeah, Another One Rides a Bus. They run on fossil fuel because they refuse to do it on water. Anyway, it's aggravating because
another
a lot of these...
Rides short bus?
Huh?
Another One Rides a Short Bus?
Yeah, and the short bus is getting crowded with mechanics and engineers and technicians. So I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to be rude or nothing about the whole deal, but doggone it, man, you've seen there's an engine out there in existence that literally is using hydrogen to preheat the cylinder and running the engine as a steam engine. Raymond said it many times, I said it many times, I actually got the number from Raymond. The water will expand 1,600 times its mass, right or wrong, Raymond?
Right.
All right. So
4.7 times more powerful than gasoline or diesel fuel.
Yeah. So with that said, worst case scenario, you make a self-contained steam engine, man. When the engine gets up to operating temperature, you know the rattling around is going to create friction, which is going to create heat and cause that block to heat up. And then you basically boil the water. You don't need a radiator anymore. You want that thing to overheat. All right. And so.
All right.
You're overheating the engine, you're causing the steam pressure to go inside a chamber where it can't go anywhere but expand and push the piston down. You got an exhaust port on the end of the stroke that will allow that pressure to release itself so that you don't blow the piston out of the bottom of the oil pan and such. Which would kind of be cool, I'd like to see that, but either way, nonetheless. We're trying to get something here that you can actually run using just water. And when you talk to people that are really highly educated, they just don't get the simplicity of the design. Because the school book says, and the laws of physics say, and the people in the mainstream business say, you know, they got a process by which they actually inject water into an internal combustion engine to clean the carbon out. Did you know that? It actually
cleans the videos I put in there?
Huh?
Look in the chat, in our person on Skype. I just put the videos in there. You might want to drop them in the super chat.
Well, the problem is, if I do it right now, if I click on them, they'll start to play, and you'll hear it live on the radio.
You can see a preview, though, inside Skype.
Okay. Let me see what we're looking at here. I'll bring... Yeah, that's nice looking. All right, so tell me what we're seeing here. V8 engine, motivation, animation, whatever.
Right. One is you can see everything inside of it. The other one actually shows the breakdown of all the parts as they go together inside the engine.
Cool. So you actually get like a clear view where you can see while it's actually running what's going on.
Yeah, the second one.
That's pretty cool.
They're being put together. Right.
I'll post those later in the chat room, because if I click on them right now, I'll have to deal with the audio portion of it.
That's cool.
I don't even
any audio in it. I turned it all the way down.
Oh. Well, are you guys in the chat room over there? ShazamRadio.com?
No.
Man. All right, that's it. It's on now. Alright, so anyway, we'll put those links in there where you can actually see inside a couple engines there. But this induction heating technology mixed with old type of diesel engine technology and steam engines and all that kind of jazz and basic science and physics, and you could literally build an engine that would literally, and I mean literally, run off of pure distilled water. And so, is this technology going to get suppressed? I'm probably sure it won't get like totally suppressed, because there'll always be somebody like me talking about running your car on water. But as far as getting it out there into the market, yeah, I'm pretty positive it's going to be suppressed, because it has been since 1979, at the very least. I believe this technology's been around a heck of a lot longer than that, but who am I to say? I'm just a mad science guy that don't comb his hair. So, what I'm basically trying to say here is I don't know how to get this done for you guys out there. I don't know how to get this thing done except for trying to do it on the cheap, which is... I need to track down a old-style diesel RC motor. Or what was the explanation that you gave earlier, Thomas, that makes it more... Because you said you could run a giant engine off of an RC.
I just said you're wanting an RC-sized engine.
Yeah.
Or a remote-control car. Or a remote-control truck. Because you can run the same RC equipment that forces that engine to run, you can run a full-size engine on it if you wanted to.
So, if I can track down one of them old-style RC-sized engines, and I can track down one of these, which I know where they're at, are on eBay, these 20-amp, 1,000-watt heater circuits, I can literally modify that old-style diesel engine to do exactly what it is I'm saying. So, that's going to be the cheapest route for me to do it. I estimate that... You know, people are usually pretty proud of those doggone little RC motors, so I'm probably looking at least a $100 bill for that one. And this circuit here, the cheapest I've found so far is $30, so $150, that's in my pocket range. I can come up with that and see that I can get this thing together. And then I also want to throw in one of those sonic vaporizer technologies that Raymond showed me. So that I can break that fuel down and essentially run that diesel almost like a flame licker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Because the flame licker, it basically had the fuel on the outside of it, and it was picking up the exhaust fume, so there's no reason why you couldn't pick up a sonic fog and have it already preheated and sucked into the intake portion of that little diesel engine and then run it like that. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea.
So if I can do it on that scale, which would be a crude model of what it is that I'm saying, then maybe then, if I show that to some mechanics which have brilliant skills... That maybe I can get their attention enough to understand that I'm not talking about running it like the doggone Mythbusters said, where you pour water down in your gas tank and go. Which actually could be done, but because of the temperatures that you'll rise up in there, you'll tear that engine and warp the valves and the heads and all that kind of stuff, because it's not made to drive like that. But, nonetheless, I ain't going to pull that. And I'm not going to run it just straight off of water, put it in my gas tank with no gas, and then try to pump that up in through the deal, because, once again, the internal combustion engine wasn't built to run like that. You have to build the pressure and the heat up before you can do it. Now, I possibly could get by with doing that to a diesel engine if I could get the starter to last long enough to build the compression up in the diesel engine and then start injecting the water in from that point. But you're talking about a little bit of time and a little bit of electricity in order to be able to get that diesel engine up to operating temperature. And when I talk about diesel engine, I'm talking about a real diesel engine. I'm talking about like something you'd see in a tractor trailer. If you could spin that thing up fast enough and keep that thing going long enough to build that compression and that heat up inside that cylinder, you could start injecting water right directly into a diesel engine without absolutely no modifications to that engine whatsoever. Because what a diesel engine does is essentially it is an air compressor. It compresses air, which produces heat, and then injects the fuel in a vaporized form, which then in turn is using combustion or compression ignition, because when the fuel is inside that piston in the cylinder, and the heat and the compression is high enough, it will literally cause the fuel to spontaneously ignite, which will burn and push the piston down from the pressure rise of the heat inside there. So essentially, now you just turned it in that air compressor into a heat engine like a Stirling engine, Raymond.
Yep.
All right, so I'm talking basic common sense. And I try to explain this to the mechanics out there. There's some folks out there who have brilliant craftsmanship. Man, I just love watching some of these people get on a lathe or a milling machine, because when you can sit there and watch them turn a chunk of steel into something, a work of art, a piece of beauty, man. Now, if I had the doggone knowledge of how to run these doggone mills and actually had the equipment myself, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, because old Shazoo would be down in the lab banging away and grinding on things until I got it done. Because I know how the engine's supposed to be designed. Majority of it's already laid down there for you. Look at the way that the diesel engine's designed, and actually study how the diesel engine actually functioned. And as far as valves, you know, there's so many different versions of valves. There's actually it's called a sleeve valve motor. And essentially what happens is when the piston's going up and down, it's got a little gear in there that keeps turning the sleeve around, and it changes from intake to exhaust. So the valve, there ain't no like regular valves like you'd see in a regular engine. It's just a sleeve going up and down across these ports, and the way that it turns up and down, it's either on the intake or the exhaust stroke. It's a pretty brilliant concept. Now, if you look at this marine diesel engine, it's got a giant valve on the top of it. And the only time that valve ever comes open is for a little bit of fuel to be injected inside there. Big giant piston going up and down, producing enough compression. And well, you see the size of these motors, and you can understand how powerful these systems really are. Because if it can run that size of a cam shaft and crank rods and all that kind of stuff, then that is a lot of power. And they put multiples of these in line, and they move great big old ships with these things. All right, so that's a lot of power, and it can be scaled down. And so when you look at that particular design, and then you look at all the other flaws and all the other systems out there, company called Evinrude, they got it. They understood the concept and the technology, and they snuck it in underneath the radar. If you go look at the Evinrude direct injection motor, outboard motor, it's a two-stroke that's out doing four-stroke engines. And another company, Rotax, kind of caught wind of what they were doing and built their own specific version of the deal, and they're putting them in snowmobiles and jet skis. So, The technology's already out there under the radar, so to speak. They're not, but they're not saying, well, you could run this on water. No, I ain't going to tell you that.
I was just sitting here thinking about the diesel engine.
Yeah.
It was invented, how it got invented, and it was some brilliant, off-the-wall, crazy guy that...
His name was Diesel.
He experienced a couple of coal dust explosions and their power. And that's what he got him thinking about using that power to run a motor. And he invented the diesel engine, which at that time was not a diesel engine. I mean, it was diesel, but it didn't use diesel fuel. It didn't use coal oil. It used actual coal dust. Yeah. I got to thinking about this. You know, I've never actually seen one, but I've heard of many grain dust explosions at granaries and just blew the whole granary completely apart. Why couldn't you run a diesel engine on grain dust? Why couldn't you run it on flour?
Well, you could.
Like at the grocery store. Why couldn't you run it on dry, dead leaves? If you ground them down to a powder, it would still work.
You could. And one thing about a grain elevator...
Anything that was combustible, that you could grind down to a powder, fine enough to inject it into the motor, and dry.
Yeah, you could.
Waste paper, cardboard, dried leaves, grass, you cut when you cut your yard, you bag it up. You could dry it down to a powder, and run a diesel motor on it.
You could. So,
there's no such thing as free energy. You're just not in the hole. It's all around you. You cut it and you throw it away every 2 weeks.
One thing about
your trash, your newspaper could be dried, ground down, and you use this fuel.
Yeah, one thing about the grain elevator explosions that people might not get is the fact that when you hear the word about a grain elevator exploding, you think of one explosion, but that's not what is actually occurring in that grain elevator. You have multiple explosions from one single grain elevator, because what happens is the dust that's in the air first ignites, which is the first explosion. That pressure wave pushes it yet even more dust up in the air, which then in turn explodes. And until you run out of all that piled up fuel on the ground, you can get many, many explosions out of it as that energy is pushing all that up and vaporizing it into the air. And that's why they're so incredibly dangerous, because of the way that that happens.
Right.
But what you're saying right there is essentially you could take that same concept, because you can see it's obviously got enough power to bust a concrete grain silo into billions of pieces. Then it's obviously got enough power to push a piston down. Coffee mate, have you ever seen people take a sprinkled coffee mate over, you know, that like creamer that you put, a coffee creamer that you put over the coffee?
Gosh, do think alike, don't they? Yeah. Thinking the exact same thing. You could actually run a diesel motor on coffee creamer.
Yeah, they sprinkle it down over an open flame and they get this big old poof going up out of there. Because anytime you vaporize something, it becomes really flammable. And if it's pressurized, it's explosive.
You put enough oxygen with it, you can use steel wool, really fine steel wool.
Yeah.
Grind it up and use it as fuel. Well, steel will burn if you get it fine enough and enough oxygen.
Essentially, there ain't no reason why this technology shouldn't already be available.
Really?
See, Stephen Gibbons posted a Wikipedia link. Rudolf Diesel, the evening of the 29th September 1913, Diesel boarded the post office steamer Dresden in Antwerp on his way to meeting of the Consolidated Diesel Manufacturing Company in London. He took dinner on board the ship and then retired to his cabin at about 10 p.m., leaving word to be called the next morning at 6:15 a.m., but he was never seen alive again. In the morning, his cabin was empty and his bed had not been slept in, although his nightshirt was neatly laid out and his watch had been left where it could be seen from the bed. His hat and his overcoat were discovered neatly folded beneath the after deck railing. Somebody said that he committed suicide. Alright, well, I'm not too sure about that because he really didn't have nothing to lose. I mean, he was on top of the world. He done invented the diesel engine and it worked, you know. I don't believe he committed suicide. I believe he probably said the wrong thing to the wrong individual about how the diesel engine would basically replace the gasoline engine one day and it'd be running off of water power instead of gas. Does that sound like a conspiracy theory that's not plausible?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was guys back then that wanted to sell kerosene, they wanted to sell gas and diesel and all that kind of stuff. Well, really didn't have diesel until you did the diesel, but either way, if you want to sell gasoline, you don't want somebody coming along saying you don't need gasoline to run this. I'm just asking, I don't know, man, I wasn't there. But I can't see why a guy who had everything going for him would have just left him jumped off the back of the ship or, you know, did himself in or anything like that. Maybe I'm not getting the whole story. But nonetheless, because of the diesel engine and the technology provided via that diesel engine, now we've learned so much about how to use different types of fuel in an internal combustion engine. And so now we're taking all these pieces of the puzzle, everything from steam engines to diesel engines to air compressor technology, induction heating, the actual internal combustion engine as far as gasoline and how it functions, compression, ignition. If you don't think you're going to be able to ignite it with compression ignition, then and you want to put a supplementary system in there, such as a plasma arc going inside there to basically heat the cylinder up yet even more and ignite any stray hydrogen and oxygen inside there. So many possibilities in order to build the perfect engine. It's just flat out ridiculous. So we need to do it. Anyway, one other thing that I had in my mind there, hate it when that happens. But you have the capability, literally, to design an engine that will run. That's one of the things about the diesel engine. The diesel engine doesn't just run on diesel. It'll run on lots of fuels. And depending on how well it's made and how well the temperature's regulated, you know, that's going to determine how long that engine actually lasts, because nothing will begin to tear itself apart until it breaks over the temperature of whatever hardening surface it was made with. You understand what that means, anybody?
Yep.
Means like if you got hardened steel and you bring the temperature up to where that hardened steel now becomes soft, that's when it'll start tearing itself up. That's why we use oil in the bearing system so that we can keep the temperature of those bearings down and it doesn't overcome what the hardness of the metal is and cause the metal to get soft and then start to tear itself up. Because if it was hardened steel and you kept the temperature down, you could run steel on steel forever and a day and never tear either one of them up. It's the same material. Neither one of them are falling victim to friction heat, which is causing the metal to literally get soft. That's the only time it'll tear it up. Am I wrong? Anybody? Yeah?
Yeah, you're right. 100% right.
So, Stephen Gibbons typed in the chat room, the diesel engine has the benefit of running more fuel efficiently than gasoline engines due to much higher compression ratios. That's one I like. And longer duration of combustion. It's another I like, which means the temperature rises more slowly, allows more heat to be converted to mechanical work. Diesel was interested in using coal dust or vegetable oil as fuel, and in fact his engine was run on peanut oil. Jimmy Carter would have been proud. man.
How about algae oil?
Algae oil would work.
It runs great on algae.
Stephen Gibbons said, congrats, Justin. What they gonna do with it? Justin?
Yeah.
Stephen Gibbons said, congrats, Justin. What they gonna do with it?
I have no idea yet.
Oh. Well, so I'm taking it you got some good news?
Well, I designed, I was inspired by the Pythagoras, Nikola Tesla, all of these forefathers, right? And I designed Metatron's cube with every single math equation inside of it.
Cool.
From the Vesica Pisces to the Fibonacci sequence to pi to the inverse square law to every single math equation.
Well, good. Now you can take that nifty gizmo out there and go educate some of these doggone auto mechanics I've been feuding with. Man, teach them a thing or two. Or three. Or four. No, look, I'm not trying to be rude to some of these people. I understand they're brilliant. Some of them are really brilliant individuals. Some of them are really skilled craftsmen. They do work good with their hands, and when they're done, it's artistic. I mean, they even polish these little engines that they build up, and they just look incredible. But to try to get them to step outside the book long enough to try to do something just new, it's almost impossible. I'm having this aggravation trying to find somebody who wants to help manufacture an engine. And I'm not talking rocket science to them. It's just, if you look at the one that, the Asian version of it, that's running basically hydrogen, compressed hydrogen in first, and then heating up the cylinder and then injecting water and running that engine like a steam engine, that ain't no different than what I've been saying. And it's been done. They did it, man. They like drove it around in the road and stuff and got permits for it. Stan Myers was driving around in the 70s with a dune buggy. He was last heard to exclaim, leaving a doggone restaurant, they poisoned me. Man, that's messed up. Look, if this really is an issue, which I don't believe it is, that we got to save the planet due to people driving their cars around, it ain't nobody listening. Don't anybody out there ever tell me about global warming / climate change / climate disruption, or we're all going to die because the polar bears are drowning and everything's gone to heck in a handbasket, because we're sitting there giving you the solutions on a silver platter. Or hands.
That's a psyop. That's a global syndicate. It's a psyop. It's a psychosis. It's a mental disease, a cognitive illness that one would have if they keep thinking that because their life is down. All we have to do is inspire.
Well, I'm trying to inspire them. But doggone it, you know how frustrated it is when you spend hours and hours of words of inspiration and wisdom and mechanics and knowledge and share all this information with everybody, and the average Joe says, well, you know, if it could be done, they'd already be doing it, you know, but you can't.
Yeah, you see, that's the psyopsis, is. That's the psyop. They would already be doing it. You see, man is lost, and they've always allowed themselves to let somebody else do it for them.
Well, Raymond never sat around and wait for they to do it.
Right. You see, most people are on autopilot, and they allow themselves to be trapped in that repetitive cognitive problem. It becomes an illness when it's like a whole bunch of little boys, and they're relying on their mother still.
Well,
and there's only a very select few that are conscious, awakened, as one would say, open-minded, right? Being able to see this disease that everybody has, and it's gross. Everybody's like, World War III, end of the world, right?
Well, I put the call out there. I threw the gauntlets down to the Mythbusters. So far, nobody's talked to me yet. I also threw the gauntlet down there to all the Save the Planet people. Yet, nobody's talked to me yet. So, I'm telling both of them, either or of them, look, You want to go out there and protest, and you want to go out there and debunk and deny that you could actually run your car on water, try to make people look stupid. And both of y'all saying that the doggone planet's heating up due to carbon emissions, which it ain't. But nonetheless, let's give you your, I'll play devil's advocate and play along with you. You said that that's what was going on. And you asked for solutions for clean, renewable, alternative energy. Justin's here, Raymond's here, Tom's here, I'm here, and we're sitting here telling you there's a technology available to give you exactly what it is that you said without no carbon emissions, clean, renewable, alternative energy. So, what are you waiting for? All right? Hmm? Yeah? You waiting for your mama to do it?
That's it.
Yeah. Ain't nobody gonna do it. Ain't nobody gonna do it until we the people do it. And that's why I'm getting frustrated, because it's taking too long. Now I gotta go back to college.
Everything is for what it is, though, right?
Yeah.
It is. There's no time that's ahead or behind.
I gotta go to college to learn how to run a milling machine, man. Or YouTube.
Well, not necessarily. All you have to do is learn fractions. Right, and convert decimal values, right, metric and English, right, and then you'd be good. Anybody can turn a knob and, you know, turn something down on a lathe or a milling machine.
Hold on, I got to answer.
Accurate with your verniers or your bicomber, right?
I got to answer a question to Stephen Gibbons. He said, you hear back from Trump, Shaziz? No, man, I still ain't even heard from Trump. I sent a letter to the president. I even got there's a copy of the doggone thing on this website. President of these United States. I ain't getting no answer. Man.
You gotta be joking me.
No, I seriously did. I'll see if I can find it. I got it somewhere. It's up in there. I'll send you a link to it. You can read my letter that I wrote to the president of these United States.
It's kind of funny. Did you really think you were going to get a response back?
Well, no, I ain't got no response. Probably never will. But nonetheless, I still wrote the letter. And if I do get a response, it'll probably be like the Men in Black showing up at my door and saying, well, under the National Defense Authorization Act, you're going to jail and you don't get no attorney because we don't like you. And so, basically, I'll just disappear one day. They'll disappear me, and that'll be that. You know, you guys, there won't be no more Mad Science but reruns, and you're like, I wonder where old Shaziz went, and I'll be over there in Guantanamo getting waterboarded.
Shaziz.
Yeah.
When you get disappeared, as you say.
Yeah.
Did I put the parentheses SIC behind that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Look in the Skype discussion here.
Yeah.
You were talking about learning how to run a mill.
Great.
Right there, that's all you need. You have a drill press. Get that and slap it on your mill press bed.
How much is it?
$149.
All right, cool. I'll have to throw that on my budget.
Yep.
All right. I'll just start getting me a chunks of metal and just kind of take my time at it and teach myself how to do it, doggone it.
Yeah, man. Just get yourself some micrometers, and there you go. You know, learn how to measure. That's all. Because you can't put it back on once you take it out.
Yeah. Well, all right. Okay. There it is.
That's a nasty mess to do that. You got to use a welder to put metal back onto it, and then you got to grind all the spatter, the bulge, and everything off.
Yeah.
Just do it right the first time.
Yeah. Learn how to use a measuring tape, that's all.
Well, alright,
yeah,
so...
A set of dial calipers will save you a lot of headache.
Yeah.
So if my engine ends up knocking the beat all heck, but it still runs, and I can get somebody's attention on it before they disappear me, maybe we'll get this thing done.
Disappear.
I'm telling you, you're going to disappear me, man. I'll be like all down in Guantanamo getting waterboarded every day. They'll be like, are you going to stop talking?
Sure, if you were going to get disappeared, you'd already be gone.
I'd be like, they're going to be like saying, Are you gonna stop talking about alternative energy? And I'm like, nope. Well, here, we're gonna dunk you again. We're like, man.
Hey, if they're gonna go to all that trouble, then they'll just take you out in the ocean, keel haul you.
Man, make me walk the plank.
They're gonna get run back and forth underneath the bottom of an aircraft carrier.
Are they gonna make me walk the plank?
No, they'll just tie you up and dunk you down under there and drag you underneath the boat up against the bottom of the boat so you come out the other side.
Dang.
Most likely you won't make it out the other side because you'll be so bloody the sharks are gonna have you.
Yeah.
So that's about the time I'll be hollering, "Life stinks!" Alright, Justin, I posted my letter to the President of these United States in the Skype chat room for you. I gotta scroll down to look and see. Nope, don't see no. Oh, by the way, folks, you're listening to Shaziz Radio Mad Science, but also we're broadcasting over there at KCT chat room. Go over there and tell Patty and all them wonderful people we said hi. Jump in their chat room and throw a smiley face at them. Anyway, so basically, when the men in black and the jackboot thugs come kicking my door in, first I'm going to get a little rowdy because you know how much it costs to replace a door frame these days? It's ridiculous. I'm like, look, you could have knocked on the door. I might have let you in, but you done knocked a hole in my door, and my wife's going to kill you. Wait till she gets a hold of you. Tearing up her house. Anyway. So, they don't want you talking about this kind of stuff because it could be a matter of national security. So whenever I finally do get there and I have this discussion with the men at the top, you know, the secret government black ops guys, and I ask them the question, look, man, why in the heck aren't you running your equipment on water? And they'll probably say, well, we already are, but y'all ain't. What do you think? You think that's plausible?
Right.
Huh?
I think you're on the right track. You know, all the engineer talk, the educated engineers say that it takes more electricity to split water into oxygen and hydrogen than when you burn the oxygen and hydrogen will produce. However, what if you burnt the hydrogen and oxygen in an internal combustion engine, but you had water vapor in there, so that increases its power? Why wouldn't that work? If you use a solid humidifier, you put water molecules in the engine on the intake stroke. Then when it comes up, it compresses, causes the air that's with that water to get hot. But now all of a sudden, when it reaches top dead center, you got this tiniest little blast of hydrogen and oxygen burning. And that creates more heat, expands the water even more, giving you far more power than you would ever, ever get from just the burning of the hydrogen and oxygen alone. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but see, I still disagree with them when they say that you ain't going to get enough power out of that because of, science experiments that I've done myself. There ain't no way they're going to tell me you can't get enough power out, because of the way that it's going. And first off, if you're using electrolysis process, that's the crudest way to do it. That's going to draw a lot of amperage, and it's going to cost you. You got to try to build up a lot of pressure before you ever even utilize it. What I'm talking about doing is literally running the thing first as an air compressor, then like a steam engine. And when you get the temperature and the pressure up enough, when they had a hydrogen explosion at the Fukushima plant, that was how that happened. You got pressure, superheated water pressurized into steam, which by that time, the pressure and the heat inside there, it was cracking the water molecule. Because you got to think about this. Look at the water molecule like a bunch of BBs in a jar. All right? Start shaking that jar up and watch the interaction between all these BBs. What do you see inside there?
Right.
They're all dancing around. They're all bouncing off of each other. Well, that's what's happening. When you energize water, you know, or even gas into the plasma state for that matter. All those molecules inside there are beating each other toothless because they're all energized, man. They had, like, they had a 24-pack of Monster drink or something like that. And running around, jumping. And so, they're already ready to crack, man. And they're getting hotter and hotter the more you energize them. So once all that pressure and all that heat and the water begins to crack, and here's another thing. The guy was saying to me that, well, you got to have some sort of voltage in order to ignite the hydrogen and the oxygen inside the chamber, you know, all this. And I'm like, alright, do you know how a fuel cell works? A fuel cell, when you separate the hydrogen and oxygen, it produces a charge. When you recombine this hydrogen and oxygen, it produces a charge. So, just that separation and trying to recombine the doggone molecule back together inside there is already putting electricity into the mix. You see what I mean? Not to mention the oxygen and hydrogen in interacting with certain types of materials will actually cause those materials to react differently. Such as when the guy is spraying the hydrogen and oxygen into the catalytic converter, once the hydrogen and oxygen hit that catalyst inside the catalytic converter, he's generating temperatures up over 600 degrees inside that catalytic converter. Now, what's the average operating temperature of a catalytic converter? Do you know? Anybody? Going once? Going twice?
Nope.
Returning to monologue.
No, actually, if you stop and think about what you just said, 600 degrees?
Yeah.
Now, what if you had a water jacket around that catalytic converter? That would more than boil steam and make way more pressure than you need to run another engine.
Sure. That's why I've been trying to say the technology's already being used in the catalytic converter.
It's been thrown away in the catalytic converter.
Yeah.
They're throwing the daggone heat away rather than using it.
They're using that process to burn up waste fuel and send a little bit of gas back up into the intake, but meanwhile to clean up your ignition. So anyway, your engine going to burn a small percentage of the fuel, which is going to get you down the road. The rest of your fuel is going out through the catalytic converter and getting basically, you know, like in The Wizard of Oz when they say, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Alright. Well, pay no attention to that man behind the catalytic converter. He don't want you to know there's 600 degrees or higher temperature going on inside there. You might want to use this power. Can't have that. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Doggone it, it's right there. It's been right underneath everybody's nose all along. If you use hydrogen technology to just do nothing more than heat your house, look. First off, you ain't got to worry about any noxious fumes coming into your house. You got a sealed system. You're spraying hydrogen inside a catalytic converter. The catalyst and the oxygen and the hydrogen are working together and producing, Stephen Gibbs said the average light off temperature at which the catalytic converter begins to function ranges from 400 to 600 degrees Fahrenheit. The normal operating temperature can range up to 1,200 to 1,600 degrees Fahrenheit. But as the amount of pollutants in the exhaust go up, so does the converter's operating temperature. And if they get plugged, those things will glow in the dark, man. They'll get so freaking red hot, they'll burn your car in half. Alright, so if you're not putting carbon into that thing, you'll never have to worry about that catalytic converter getting plugged. Now, how long will the catalyst work inside the catalytic converter? It must be several years, because even with carbon going in there and hydrocarbons from unburnt fuel and the moisture that might be sucked in through the intake and through your air breather and finally in through the piston and then out the exhaust is interacting with it as well. And so eventually, you know, the outside of the catalytic converter begins to rust, and it gets plugged up with carbon and soot and all that kind of stuff. And once it gets plugged up and you notice your car won't run very good, and then eventually your car won't run at all, and then you take a Sawzall, one of them little battery-powered ones, and you go in there and Sawzall your catalytic converter off and start your car right back up because now your car can breathe again. Huh. Fahrenheit 1600 degrees, man. What could you do with 1600 degrees, Raymond? You could heat your house, you could cook your chicken, burn your biscuits.
You know, you said something a minute ago about a catalytic converter getting so red it would glow in the dark.
Yep.
This, I had a 1991 Ford Ranger, when the Ford Ranger was a full-size pickup truck, had a catalytic converter on it. That sucker got clogged up. It glowed red in the sunlight.
Yeah.
On a bright sunny day. No, they get super hot.
Why they do
if you could take two vehicles, run them side by side, take your catalytic converter on the gasoline engine, put a water jacket on it, it would make enough steam to run another truck with a steam engine in it side by side.
Yep.
All day long.
And so, with that said, why do you think they tell you people not to park their modern-day cars on the grass?
Right.
A low-profile car sitting on the grass with a superheated catalytic converter on it, they stay heated for hours after you shut your car off. And basically, poof, the grass catches on fire, your car catches on fire, the neighbor's house catches on fire, the cow kicks over the lantern in the barn, and the next thing you know, San Francisco's up in smoke, and Cheech and Chong are singing about it.
Yep.
Up in smoke is where I want to be. You're welcome, Thomas.
You know, if you stop and think about it, what I just said, really think about it, you could use gasoline to boil water and run your engine with a steam engine, or run your steam engine to drive your automobile and get way, way more gas mileage.
Yeah. Or you could make a hybrid gasoline engine / steam engine. That
right.
When you got the catalytic converter up to operating temperature, you start turning the water through there, it instantaneously flashes the steam, giving you 650 to 1250 PSI that you then in turn run down through a turbo system and inject it, some of it into your gasoline engine and the other portion into a steam turbo generator.
Right.
Man.
You know, the thing is, a four-cycle engine is so easy to change to a steam engine. It is unbelievable. Totally unbelievable.
Yeah, all you got to do is put another lobe on the cam.
Exactly. I mean, you'd have to take your spark plugs out and run a steam line through it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it's not that hard, man.
That's just and you could actually run your gasoline engine on a steam engine and burn your gasoline to boil the water to make steam. And you probably increase your gas mileage by your gasoline mileage by anywhere from 3 to 4 times.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And if you run it on vaporization technology, your emissions will be next to zero because you'll be getting a perfect clean burn every single time. So you could still run gasoline to heat up the catalytic converter to turn the water into steam to run another engine side by side with it.
Right.
So, Doggone it, people, don't tell me that it can't be done. And for these auto mechanics out there, if you don't understand this by now, I'm sorry. I really am. I love you guys, but man, I'll tell you what, you just ain't got your act together, because what they taught you in school is a hindrance compared to what you could be doing right now. Man, you could literally sit there and redefine how the doggone oil industry charges people for fuel, because you could make those engines so incredibly efficient. And if there's a million and a half brilliant mechanics out there with access to machine shops, and you got a million and a half people building these engines, ain't no way they're going to shut all y'all down. What's the congressman going to do when his limousine breaks down and you're on strike? I ain't fixing no congressman's limousine until they get off my back, Jack. What do you think?
Hey, man, I got to make a quick run to the bank, so I'll be gone for about 15, 20 minutes, but Thomas is still here.
All right, well, hey, Thomas, you want to take a music break?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, well, I'm going to throw on a long song. Everybody, you listen to Mad Science.
We'll be right back.
the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
This is True Light, a portable television studio.
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, watch your tongue, young man. Watch it. You're listening to Shazoo's Radio Mad Science Live, man. Thomas, are you still around?
No.
Okay, well, when you get back, give yourself a message. I posted those video links over there to the superchat.html. One of them showing about vibration of molecules, and two of them showing about the internal combustion engine looking inside, man. It's pretty cool. Thank you for the links.
You did it?
Yeah, it's there, they're in there.
Alright.
Alright, so it's a done deal. So, anyway, excuse me. Let me take a drink of my coffee so I can stop doing that. That's annoying. It's bad for radio. Alright, so. Huh? Man. Yeah. All right, Steven just posted a link, I think. I need to look at this picture. Come at me, bro. He's looked like an anteater getting ready to rumble.
Hey.
Oh, I like that.
post this one?
Huh?
Hold on. Have you posted that video?
Let me see. Yeah, that's, you gotta scroll back in the chat room, but yeah, I did post that prior.
Okay. I came up, when I pulled up those other two videos, it was on the side there, so.
Yeah, we could always repost it.
Good deal.
But anyway, that's a glass engine with a glass head on the top of it, but what's cool about this is they run different types of fuels through this particular motor, so you can see how the fuel is actually reacting inside the combustion chamber. And I'm still looking at this picture that Stephen Gibbons posted. It's an anteater with his arms out, and he's standing out there looking like, come at me, bro. Oh, man. I think that's an anteater. It looks like one. Anyway. So, basically what we're talking about is redesigning the internal combustion engine to run off of water. And, you know, every time you say that, Mythbusters kind of like groupies that come rolling up out the doggone closet and, oh, no, you can't do that. And then you ask them why, and then they try to explain to you in somebody else's terminology why it's not even remotely possible, or you can't get out enough pressure or whatever. And even some of the most brilliant minds seem to fall down to, you know, what the physics say and all that kind of stuff, and they don't understand exactly the point of what you're trying to get to. But
so you say they're trying to science-explain you?
Yeah. But the doggone, Asian folks over there are driving around in a van with a similar technology to what I'm explaining. They're basically pushing compressed hydrogen into the cylinder. They're igniting it, which in turn is producing heat inside there. And so that heated cylinder, then in turn they push vaporized water into the cylinder, which flashes the steam and produces the pressure and pushes down the piston and so on. So it's already they're already doing it. I just want to get it out there on a massive scale to where everybody can do it. Man, if you're going to rely on the government or the doggone corporations out there to get their act together and put this technology out there on the market, you're going to be waiting for a while because there's too much money to be made the way that it is right now. You know, my grandpa used to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, the gasoline engine works. It's not really efficient, but it works. And people had specified that it was like polluting up the planet and causing global warming, which outside is under 60 degrees at my house today.
Hey, the engine might not be broken, but it's breaking people's budgets the way it runs right now.
Yeah.
They got to fix something so the budget stays on cue. So we either got to go after the Federal Reserve and the people who are jerking the chains of the money around, causing us all to go under, or you're going to have to find a way to come up with ways to tighten your belt.
Yeah. The doggone fuel prices are ridiculous, man. Look, go to the...
$1 a gallon now.
Yeah, go to the doggone store, and any convenience store, even the grocery store for that matter, and go price a glass, a bottle of water. You're going to get a bottle of water for a dollar, if you're lucky. Might be, if you add flavor to it, it's probably going to cost you more than that. But nonetheless, they figured out how to sell you water for a dollar. Man, after you had your own cleaning technology, you could go down and drink the creek water or the pond water. You could have it filtered out crystal clear. There's technology available for that. But, hey, for convenience factor, I'll just go to the store and spend a dollar on a bottle of water. If you go drink a bottle of water every day that you bought at the deal, and there's 7 days in a week, that's $7 a week. Times two would be 14. Times four, or two more on top of that, 14 and 14 would be, what, $28 a month just for your daily dose of water?
That's not a daily dose. Well, you have to drink more than one a day.
I'm just saying if you only could afford one a day.
If you could only afford one a day, you're going to die of thirst.
Yeah. So you're going to have more. How many more bottles of water do we have to add to that?
typical bottle of water costs a dollar, you're going to have at least three a day.
Okay, so three times seven.
You mean three times 28, because that's what you came up with before?
Yeah.
And that ain't even a month. That's the only month that that fits is February.
What price tag we on?
Huh?
What price tag we on so far?
Oh, you mean how much is the total?
Yeah.
78?
$78 a month, depending on which month it is, before you can get a bottle, three bottles of water a day to. Man.
It's, that's $84.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
$84 a month, that's your water bill for your fresh water that you buy from the grocery store.
Don't plan on drinking it out of tap, because they poison that with fluoride and all kinds of other toxins to make sure the bacteria won't hurt you if you're just sticking your hands in it to wash your hands and wash your dishes.
Yeah.
Never mind what it'll do to you if you actually drank it.
What a mess. So, that's what you got going on, folks. You can either choose to continue the norm and keep going to the doctor being all sick from weird things that are happening to you because of chemistry in the water. They showed one thing where they were recycling water through the sewage plants. They had sewage treatment plants, and the water would get recycled. And they talked about how many vitamins and different drugs were ended up in the doggone water supply. Ain't no wonder people are nuts these days. How you get all that out of the water, man? Anyway, maybe...
That's about it.
Yeah, that's about
it. You have to be careful about your distillery process and make sure you're only cooling it down enough to reach the temperature that the water will condense at.
Yeah.
Go much cooler to try to speed it up, then you get other chemicals that actually will condense with it too, that you end up distilling off instead of it being outgassed off.
Well, there you go. So, we're talking about how you can literally take and redesign it using existing technology and basic science to really get good, clean, renewable alternative energies. The government's got to know this. The auto industries have to know it. The corporations out there have to know it. I mean, if a guy like me could figure this stuff out, along with all of you guys like you guys, if we can figure this stuff out, and they hire the most brilliant people they can get a hold of to basically build stuff, then there has to be knowledge out there like what we're saying. But I'm telling you, the average Joe, you ain't going to see it until they decide it's a necessary evil for them to share it with you. Because they got lots of oil. They want to sell it. And the oil is going to keep on coming. They want to sell it. And the moment you change up the system, then that means that they can't sell it anymore. If they do sell it, they pretty much got to lower the price down because ain't nobody buying it. Supply and demand kind of thing. And the governments will be worried about it because that means a lot of tax money wouldn't be going to the government to fight that military-industrial complex machine or whatever to run it. So, this technology gets suppressed from way back all the way up to modern present time. It gets suppressed. It's no conspiracy. It's fact. Companies aren't going to sell you things until they sell what they got on the shelf already. The iPhone, prime example. One didn't have a camera in, the other did have a camera in. So, they already had the one that had the camera design, but they needed to get their money worked out of that, so they'd sell that to you for, I don't know, $300, $600, or something like that. And then wait a few months until that one there is about off the shelves, and then say, look, we got the new iPhone and it's got a camera in it. Golly, here, give us another $600. They could have just put that out there, man. But no! Can't go that route. That might help somebody out. Might make your pocket a little thin. So the power companies, they know what's going on. They know technology exists. I mean, it goes all the way back to Tesla, whenever he was trying to give people free wireless energy, and they realized couldn't put a meter on it. Bam! What happened? Hey, you're paying a light bill today. Imagine that. And, ironically enough, even though it's using the same technology it was back then, you're still paying a higher price because it keeps going up. Imagine that. But what if you listen to some crazy old guy that don't comb his hair and calls himself a mad science guy, and you re-engineered in your own personal communities and machine shops engines that would run on the technology available. Didn't take gasoline. You don't have to worry about buying gasoline anymore. Number one, gasoline prices will start going down because you ain't buying gasoline. So that's going to benefit you for those old jalopies you still want to drive around. So it's not going to become extinct, it's just going to become cheaper. And as far as jobs, you know, opening a new industry and building new style engines, it'll open more jobs. Give people an opportunity to make some doggone money, for Pete's sake. So we're not talking about destroying the national security or, you know, damaging the economies of the world. We're talking about making it better. You make the internal combustion engine better. Number one, they're not trying to slide dog you into paying a carbon tax, which is a ridiculous ripoff of epic proportions. If you believe in global warming, you didn't pay attention in science class, and you ain't been outside today because it's under 60 degrees outside of my house. Jeez. How long does it take the planet to heat up, man? Well, either way, the technology is available. It's been there for quite some time. And until we decide we want it, and until we get our skilled craftsmen together and can get our mechanics and engineers to think outside the box and look at the big picture. If they can do it in Asia, we can do it here. If they've done it in the 1800s and then even into the 1970s and all the way up through the present day, you know, when you look at doing something such as cracking hydrogen and oxygen, cracking a water molecule, and you're using an old process like electrolysis, number one, you got to understand that you're doing it wrong, crudely, and creating a byproduct such as crud inside your hydrogen cells. That video that Thomas posted there, water molecules shaking up, shows that everything is mechanical, even down to the microscopic is mechanical. And it's a brilliant, deal if you pay attention to what's going on down there. And if you understand what's going on down there, and you understand when these molecules are beating each other toothless, that they're producing friction, which in turn is producing heat, and at some point, something's got to give. You can't flex something over and 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 over again without something coming apart. Using microwave technology, if you put a glass of water in the microwave for an hour, it only takes about 2 minutes to boil water in the microwave, actually less. But 2 minutes, it's hotter than all get out. But nonetheless, if you put it in there for an hour, you go back to get your glass of water, ain't gonna be no glass of water. You're gonna open the door and the steam's gonna come rolling up out of that joint, if not worse. But, hey, who am I to say? Microwave technology, it rocks a water molecule because water is a dipolar molecule, has a positive and a negative side to it, north and the south field, and as the wave is coming through, it's causing it to rock back and forth so rapidly that it produces friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. So you've got water cooking your food. Now if you can cook your food with water, then why can't you use that same water and the same type of system inside an engine to run the engine, which essentially is a steam engine or a heat engine or an internal combustion engine? depending on how much heat, how rapidly you're rocking those molecules to the point where you can literally separate them on demand and burn the hydrogen and oxygen at the same exact time, there ain't no reason whatsoever why you should be putting gasoline or diesel fuel into an internal combustion engine when we have the technology to do it with something that is so prevalent on the planet. The Earth is over 3/4 covered in water. You ain't never going to run out of water, no matter how hard you try. So stop saying it. It might pollute your local streams where they ain't fit to drink. But even that can be resolved. There's solutions for everything under the sun if you want to pay attention and learn a little bit of stuff. So, water is like one of these really cool tools that nature has provided where you can not only cut stones, but you can cut steel. You can use it for hydraulic pressure. You can do so much. You can clean your car. You can wash your face. You can use it for fuel. It's the most amazing fuel source in the history of history. And what we do instead, we run internal combustion engines off of gasoline, which if the vapors, if you get out of your car and get to a gas station and the vapors are coming up out of the tank there, and you already got a static charge built up on your clothes, and then you reach over to grab the gas nozzle and that static charge arcs across to the metal and basically ignites the fumes and sets fire to your face, and you're running around and they're hollering, "Charlie, be all right, just roll Charlie around. Call the medic." In the fire department. You know what I mean?
You know, I've seen that happen one time.
Yeah? Well,
gas in her gas tank.
Yeah.
We still got the gas nozzle. Opened the door to the gas tank, took the lid off, and stuck the nozzle to it, and that thing sparked. A puff of flame come out of there, about 6-8 inches in diameter, about 5 or 6 feet long.
Yep.
It was right in the face. It singed the heck out of her hair.
Well, you know, so knowing that, and knowing that water in its natural state puts out fires, why wouldn't you want to use a fuel that would be so incredibly safe, that would be so incredibly environmentally friendly, that we know has power potential, amazing power potential?
Yep.
Pressurized water will literally cut through steel.
Yep.
Pressurized water will not only cut through steel, it'll cut through wood and do it so smoothly you almost don't have to sand it.
Yeah, that's right. That's for sure.
So,
it's polished.
Nature has provided us every single solution to every single problem under the sun. And all we do is fight with nature. We don't ever try to get along. If you pollute your local streams and your creeks and everything like that, then, you know, you got to expect you're going to end up with diseases in certain areas. You're going to end up with cruddy water and fish dying off and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of folks out there who will jump right on the doomsday bandwagon. And they'll jump on it in a hurry. Ah, we got to go out there and save the world, man. I'm going to be a hero. Well, be a hero by passing these podcasts around. Just put some common sense out there so we can all get together and accomplish some amazing things. That would be good. While you're standing out there protesting with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees. And oh, by the way, go listen to that mad science guy and his friends who are talking sense. That'd be good.
Yep.
First step to saving the planet is getting off the couch, right?
Right.
Anyway, we have the technology to do it, and if we decide we want to work in harmony with nature, we can do it. We know why diseases happen. We know why things work and how things work because we've had years of people studying physics and science and all that. And right now, we're kind of like sitting on a crossroad. You know, when people jump on the doomsday wagon such as the Fukushima disaster over there, if Fukushima is the biggest disaster in the history of time, there was some terminology they used on that deal. I can't remember what the deal was. It's either way, in the conspiratorial world, the core is going to melt through to the center of the Earth and cause an atomic explosion unlike anything in the history of time. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Come on, man. We got the technology to clean that crud up, too. You know, look, I don't speak very good Japanese, but at least try to get some translator to talk to some of them and have them talk to me, and we'll work it out. Because right now, we turn around and take this mess out there, we clean the doggone thing up, let nature do what nature does, and help nature along to get us back where we should have been all along without trash and everything, and we'd be fine. But the doomsdayers would rather sit around and complain and holler that the planet's going to blow up and we're all going to freaking die. Like when the time the fuel rods fell off down into the reactor, the core. Man, there was a whole firestorm of videos on YouTube. Oh no, 10 control rods fell down into the center of the core of the reactor, man, and we're all gonna die. And I'm sitting there looking at half my brain hurts because I'm sitting there thinking, could it be possible that there could be this many stupid people in the world? Seriously. If you'd have paid attention in science, I typed in, I said, do you even know what the control rods do? They're set there to literally block off the energy to grab up isotopes as they're being released by the radioactive material, the fuel rods, and slow down the process of heating the water. So the only thing that occurred there was when those 10 control rods fell down into the middle of that reactor, it just turned the volume down. It basically made that reactor less efficient at boiling water.
Right.
Yeah. And see,
to drop the fuel rods, you didn't have a different situation.
Well, there ain't no way to drop the fuel rods.
All it did, like you said, all it did was reduce its efficiency. That's it.
Well, anyway, there's an electromagnet on the top of the deal that holds all these fuel rods, and it's designed this way so that if the power for some reason shuts off, it will automatically release the control rods down in between the reactor and shut down the reaction, so that as long as you keep your cooling water to a certain temperature, everything's fine until you get everything resolved, and then you fire up the electromagnet, pull the fuel rods up where you need them, and basically turn the heat up again. But these folks were out there panicking. Man, there was doomsday pastors out there hollering, oh, it's apocalypse, we're all gonna die, it's like, oh, I don't know what to do, and Chicken Little running around, the sky's falling.
Right.
Well, that's ridiculousness. And that's what we talk about here on Mad Science, is trying to fight against the ridiculousness and get solutions to problems that exist in the world and make it better, fix it. That's it. We can run a car off of pure distilled water. And if anybody out there wants to debate it or argue over it, they can go ahead and talk till they're blue in the face. The science proves it. The physics proves it. The Mythbusters tried to disprove it, and in the process, proved it.
Right.
Oh, man. You know, I love the Mad Science Show, but then again, I despise the Mad Science Show. Because I know there's certain things in this world that need to be fixed. That's what everybody said. Things need to be cleaned up. Things need to be resolved. There's issues out there. Okay, so we brought a round table together. We started resolving issues. We started giving people information on how things could be done. And even during the BP oil spill, We were talking about clean methods by which they could recover that doggone oil, for Pete's sake, and clean up the mess. But no, BP decided to take it upon themselves to dump tons and tons and tons of corrosive down in the oil that's supposed to break down the oil up so that it disperses it and little microbes can eat it up and all that kind of stuff. But what they didn't factor into their equation was how many fish were going to swim through that crud.
Right.
And how many of the microorganisms that rely on the oil and stuff or whatever, because even you got oil in you, man. But
yeah,
I've got a minute. Yeah. So they're putting a dispersant in there by the thousands of gallons, and I think that if I'm not incorrect, they're still doing it to this very day. They just put less in because the EPA said, "Well, maybe you ought to cut back on that a bit." Maybe the EPA should have said no to begin with and made them figure out a easier, a better, more ecologically friendly way to do it.
I wonder how many fish they killed with that cotton picking chemical.
Oh, millions. Because
after all, you can buy fish oil as a vitamin or a supplement.
Yep.
So all fish are full of oil. Humans are full of oil. Plant life is full of oil. Algae is 40% by weight oil. Most of your the life cycle of the entire ocean is based on algae.
And so with that said, the world is a carbon-based oil-filled, hey, you ain't never running out of crude oil, no matter how hard you try. I don't care. And I'll argue till I'm blue in the face with that. Yeah, go ahead, say we're going to run out of oil, say that global warming is caused by man's driving his car and all that kind of stuff there. You didn't pay attention in science, you didn't pay attention in physics, and you sure as heck didn't pay attention to mad science.
Yeah, man's contribution to global warming is equal to 100 people standing on the edge of the ocean studying it, trying to raise the level.
Yeah. And basically, when a volcano spews all that crud up in the air, who are you going to charge the carbon tax to? Mother Nature?
You know, the one medium-sized volcano in 48 hours spews out more carbon dioxide than all the human beings in the United States tried to save over a 10-year period.
Yep. Well, folks, we're down to it.
We have an absolute minimum of 25 volcanoes spewing out crud into the atmosphere every second of every day.
Yep.
And has been doing it for the past 400 or 500,000 years.
Well, look. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough or you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I brought up the point this morning when we were discussing diesel engines. In fact, they were designed to burn coal dust. Actually, think about it. Dried leaves. People break them up in piles and burn them. Grind them up. Swallow up and use them for fuel for diesel engines.
Yeah.
You mow your grass. You put it in the trash and send it to a landfill. Dry it out. Grind it up and use it for diesel fuel.
Yeah, we can redesign, because essentially all these engines are heat engines anyway. They use expansion and contraction and all that kind of stuff to pressure and heat to move things. And
right,
so,
thing. Look, check this out for a minute. They want to make alcohol for fuel from corn. No, you don't. You grow the corn, you eat it. You take the stalk, you squeeze it down, squeeze the sugar out of it, and make alcohol from it. The stalk that's left that you squeezed all the moisture out of, you dry it up a little better, you grind it up, and it's diesel fuel. Come on, man.
Huh. All right, well, we're down to it, and that ends the Mad Science Show, folks. Doggone it. I hate it when this time comes around, but, you know, hey, we got like lads to lead, and we got science experiments to do and all that kind of stuff. Do me a favor. If you like Mad Science Show, share it on your social media networks and pass it around to as many people as you can to get them to come here and listen to what we got to say. That way we can get some folks interested in getting together and doing things and accomplishing things and giving the world what they said they needed. It's as simple as that. And if you can find a good translator, have the translator talk to me and the people over there at Fukushima, and we'll work out a solution on how they could turn what would have normally been a bad thing into a good thing. We'll use all that old wasted energy out there. Your car...
You know what? I would really like to see somebody do just what I said. I mean, have an old diesel tractor or whatever, and take old corn stalks, grind them up, and use them for fuel in a tractor. I'd love to see somebody make a video of that, how to convert a diesel engine to burn coal dust, wood dust, grain dust, whatever.
All right, couple quick things here.
I convert that motor to do it because I would convert one.
Couple quick things here. All you'd have to do, number one, is take the carburetor out of the equation because the carburetor ain't set up to go with that size of molecule being sent into there. You create a different style of intake where you basically you're sending dust in, all right? And inside of a grain bin, usually it's a static electric charge that ends up freaking igniting that and causing the explosion. So... all you need to do is have the spark plug already ready to go, and as soon as you send that dust in there and pow, you can get a regular Briggs & Stratton engine to run off of coffee mate or dust or whatever. Alright, that's simple. And on the other portion of
coffee grounds.
Huh?
How about use coffee grounds?
Sure. Why not? But there was one other thing that I wanted to say. Doggone it. I got distracted and lost it.
Sorry about that.
But either way, the fuel, it would be so simple. Alright?
Yep.
And so with that said, look, folks, if you want to get this thing done, it's about us getting together and doing it. You know, Raymond, we should just get probably a two-stroke engine, probably good enough. And... create us a little dust machine and basically fire up a little two-stroke engine using nothing more than dust.
Right.
Because if the flame licker works, and we know that you can ignite the doggone coffee mate with a flame, why couldn't you do the same thing inside an internal combustion engine? Maybe you got to make the spark a little hotter, so that it actually has a little plasma effect going. As soon as that hits that flame, pow!
Right.
Alright, that's another good science experiment. Either way, we're going to get these things done, even if they have to do it all by ourselves, but it sure would be beneficial if everybody would help share these podcasts around and get the world energized into making all this stuff come about. I had something else that I wanted to say, but I can't remember what it was. So with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Maybe we'll take this subject up again, because that's a how to fix the world kind of subject, ain't it, Raymond?
See
you. Yeah?
What did you say? I'm sorry, Thomas was talking to me.
I said maybe we take this subject up on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow if you guys want, because that's a save the world kind of thing, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That would go great. Several times you mentioned about throwing down the gauntlet.
Yep.
Well, I'm smart enough to do it, so I'm going to throw down the gauntlet. I want to see somebody make a video converting a diesel engine to run on dust.
Yeah.
Coal dust, coffee mate, anything. Anything that can be made into a dust that is combustible. But I know it'll work. I just don't know how to do it.
Well, the only issue is to make sure that you got your igniter hot enough so that it basically mimics the Bic lighter flame, you know, because that's usually what happens. Usually in a grain bin, it's a static charge that does it. So it might already be ready to go. You might just have to blow some dust in that and fire it up.
Aw, crap.
Oh!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.